Hola, hola, good day, welcome. Welcome to another episode and thanks a lot for being here. I hope your energy level is sufficient because this episode is energetic, full of laughter and powerful conversations. And I'm not gonna be alone today. Today I talk to Debbie. Do you want to learn all about how your brain is wired when you're learning a new language? Debbie is an expert on all Spanish and neurolanguage coaching. It's her mission to teach Dutch expats to speak more than un poquito de español, and she does that through neurolanguage coaching. In 2006, she started to explore her passion for the Spanish language, really, and lived in Barcelona for a year. Nicaragua and intense traveling through Central America followed. And during that year, she started her online business teaching others Spanish. We're gonna hear all about how she found herself on a birthday in Nicaragua and how she believes learning the traditional way is no longer the way. Enjoy! Good afternoon, Debbie!
Good afternoon, good morning for you.
Good morning for me, good afternoon for you. You are an expert about all things in Spanish, a certified neurolanguage coach, and aside from that, for me, one of the most energetic, positive human beings I've met recently. And it's your mission to teach Dutch expat to speak more than un poquito de español. I am super happy to have you here. I want to hear all about it. But let's start with saying, where are you today?
I am in your, well, not your home country, your country of origin. I'm in the Netherlands. Yes.
Which is your country of origin as well, isn't it?
Yep. Definitely. And thank you for the super nice introduction. And you are more, a lot of people have been telling me lately that I always look so happy, and I'm like,
but it's true,
apparently.
But
thank you.
So does it surprise you?
I don't necessarily see myself as a very upbeat, happy person, but a lot of people have been saying that to me lately, so yeah, I guess I am.
Exactly. And I guess then we can conclude that it's the authentic version of yourself then. If you are not so aware of it, let's say that it's really...
I guess, yeah.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Debbie. I am a Dutchie, just like you. But I do live in the Netherlands, although I've been straying around the world for a bit. I lived in Spain 17 years ago for a year to learn Spanish. And then I somehow got involved with Spanish so deeply that I could not let that go. And years later, I studied Spanish in university, went to Latin America, to Central America, to be more precise. And I lived in Nicaragua for a year. And that was like my introduction to Latin America after all those years of studying the language and the culture. And it was nothing short of what I imagined. It was much more than that, actually. and now I find myself in the Netherlands. My daughter is half Latina. I've gathered around myself this beautiful Latin community where I'm being accepted being a Dutchie, which is kind of strange, but also
cool.
I really love it because I feel like I live between two worlds in my own, hometown in the south of the Netherlands. So it's strange, but it's nice.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. And I mean, for people that cannot see you, but I can tell that the passion is clear on your facial expression. Because it was in 2006 when you moved to Barcelona, yeah, right? To learn... purely and only to learn Spanish. That was your goal.
Yeah, I learned Spanish in a school for 4 hours a day, every day, and I lived with a host family.
And was that, let's say, that desire for the Spanish language, was that always there? Or how can you elaborate a bit on where that came from?
Well, I've always been a freak about languages. When I was little, we always go on holidays to France or to Spain or Italy, even at times. And we used to go to campsites, and I was the first one of my three other siblings that would go out and about and connect with children that would not speak Dutch. While the other three, they were always like, "Yeah, but I don't understand them, and I don't want to play with them." So it started really early on.
Cool.
And yeah, and I've also in school, like, Dutch was really easy for me. I remember at some point they started to give me homework in English, whereas the other kids would have to do the Dutch dictée, which is like you have to write what they say in the correct spelling. And yeah, for me that was like, oh, I can learn another language now. Yeah, let's learn. But I was also kind of a loner, no? I was really like this girl always with a nose, her nose in a book studying. And yes, yeah, we would always go to holidays in Spain, and I didn't learn Spanish in high school. I was like, I wanted to go abroad for a year. I wanted to learn Spanish. I wanted to become a translator. And they told me, like, look, the Spanish language is really difficult for most of our first year students. So we can recommend you first learn the Spanish language. And I was like, okay, let's go. So that was like, okay, now I want to go abroad. I need to learn Spanish. One and one is two, right? So
Exactly.
I went to Spain.
And you went to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ex
Yeah.
really cool, really cool. And did you, I mean, would you say you managed to properly learn Spanish in that year? How did it go?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also because I lived in a host family.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of students didn't, to be honest, because of course it was a very international environment. So
Yeah.
my classmates, I would still say at that age, I was 18, they came from all over the world. And most of them came to party, which I consider quite normal at that age, right?
I would say so. Yeah, definitely.
So a lot of them didn't reach their language goals. But I really wanted to learn Spanish, and I wanted to be able to, like, to talk to the host family and to the people in the street. And I was like, if I live here, I want to make Spanish friends, because now I can practice instead of, like, I spoke English every day with the other students, but that wasn't what I was there for.
No.
So yeah, I really put an effort into it. And although I think part of what contributed to it was the classes in Spanish, learning Spanish in Spanish,
Yeah.
which nowadays a lot of my students, they're like, yeah, but if I have to learn Spanish and they don't speak English, then how can I learn? I'm like, mommy, I learned Spanish without any English words. It's possible. But what helped even more was really trying to connect with the host family, with the people in the streets, because you hear it all the time. So you can make sense of all the input that you get instead of, trying to have more output, making grammar exercises, I don't know what. So really immersing myself definitely helped me learn how to speak it super quick. And although, like, I was fluent, or I could have a conversation, but of course you fall short on certain grammar structures or words. But I think once you have, like, the basis, the rest is gonna follow.
Yeah, and I
Yeah.
mean, I can tell by experiences that, let's say, the grammar structure in Spanish is a different ball game. It's of course, every language has its grammar, but the feminine, masculine wording, past tenses and so on, it has not been easy for me either.
Yeah, a lot of people struggle with the grammar particularly.
Yeah, but I can definitely also relate to what you're saying, is that if you surround yourself with people speaking that language, whether if it's native or not, it really, let's say, in a very natural way forces you to just go for it, really, and to embrace your mistakes, and the rest indeed will follow. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
But so, and then in somewhere in 2014, if I'm correct, you
were
in Central or Latin America, and you've decided to convert this passion into making a business out of it. It's when you started in business, correct?
Not too long ago, actually.
What happened in between, or what made you decide to go travel to Central and Latin America? Because this,
what happened in between,
dependency on the Spanish culture, language, and so on.
Yeah. Well, what happened in between is I studied Spanish in university. I did my bachelor's degree. And there was, well, I did another couple of studies that I never finished because I got bored with the beginner level Spanish. Yep. So I didn't drop out because I didn't understand Spanish. Like, it was too easy. But then in university, like, we finally got to a point where I felt like I was learning stuff again. Not only the language, but also like an academical way of thinking was new to me, because I came from like professional formation, was like one level lower of education that we have here in the Netherlands. So that was new to me. I was like, wow, I have to like study books. And I was like, I felt like this 9-year-old girl again, you know, learning English. Like, and yeah, from there, as we studied a lot about the literature and the culture and the history, of course, I got so curious about Latin America. And my mom reminded me that I also, as a kid, like, I did a presentation about the Maya culture, and she said, "You've always been fascinated by these cultures." And I was like, "You see?"
Yeah.
It's like all the puzzle pieces started falling into place. But then, like, I was like, okay, so I traveled to Spain alone. I speak Spanish. I studied Spanish. I felt like I had all this book knowledge, but I wanted to experience it myself. Although I was scared shitless, because I was like, everybody was like, "It's so dangerous in Latin America. Don't go there. Don't go by yourself. No, you have to go to another country. You have to go with a tour, be with an organized tour operation." And I was like, tour operator, and yeah.
Why do you think that is, that people in the Netherlands or in your surroundings were so, let's say, concerned about your well-being?
We don't like to take risks too much, I guess, in the Netherlands.
We need to
know what we're up to.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also, I think, especially at that time, I think the awareness and the general knowledge about the Latin American continent was very limited, I guess. Right? It was the big unknown, so to say. Not traveling there was not extremely common at that time.
Yeah, well, I guess in some way it still has that kind of image.
I agree. Definitely. So, and then, but you went for it, even though
I really didn't know where to go, because Latin America is like, it's huge. Where do you begin? You know? So I gathered some money with my travel blog. I did a fundraising, and I wanted to invest it in a social project that I could contribute to as a volunteer. And I somehow ended up in Nicaragua, of all places.
Of all places. And would you say, how did being able to communicate comfortably in Spanish has helped you in that journey?
Oh, it certainly helped me, but I also, like, my Spanish at that point was the Spanish from Spain.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is going to be easy, you know? I can understand them. And I got there, like, I had a really long flight, so I was totally jet lagged. And I got there, and then an ex-colleague of my mom came to pick me up. So I was like, okay, at least I arrive in familiar circumstances, no? You got invited to a birthday. Like, you know, you get there after a, I don't know, 30-hour travel trip, and you get invited to a Nicaraguan birthday.
How was that?
You get the local. Oh my God, it was amazing, but I was so tired. I was so tired, and I was trying to understand what they said, and they spoke so fast and like words that I didn't know, and they laughed at me because of my Spanish, and I was like, what did I do?
Yes, where,
why am I here?
Where did this go wrong, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's challenging.
So, yeah, it did help me, but it was a totally different context than Spain, like culturally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that you mentioned it because, I mean, the cultural context really, really depends, or really, really makes a difference in terms of how we communicate, right? So language is simply just a tool to get messages across.
Yeah.
And but I mean, there's nothing that I can tell you on that because you are a certified language, neuro language coach. So I will not burn my hands on trying to sit on your chair, really. For people that are not so familiar with the concept of neuro language coaching, tell me. Tell
what
us.
Is it?
Lighten us.
What is it?
Lighten us. Well,
if I may ask you, yeah, there's like three terms in it, no? You have neuro, you have language, and you have coaching.
Yes.
What do those terms say to you?
So neuro refers to our brain, or how we're wired, how our brain, I imagine, capture languages, how we process, how we learn. Let's keep it simple. Well, language, I think, speaks for itself. Is a tool of communication, where coaching is. In a coaching way, supporting someone to learn that language in the way that works for that individual brain.
Please beautiful, don't, beautifully please said. Don't feel I have me. Very no, I have very, very little to add to that. It's indeed, it's about how does our brain learn?
Yeah.
And not only learn languages, but learn generally, because partially we all, our brains learn the same, but for another part, every brain is different. And I'm also trained in coaching you around language blockages to lower your inhibitions that you feel. So it's not only about how the brain learns, but it's also how do we process those triggers? Because in certain ways, I know like the definition of trauma is being thrown around nowadays everywhere. But in some ways, we also have like language trauma when we think back to our days in school and how we had to learn language and prepare for exams that we didn't feel prepared for because we never had to speak. And then suddenly you had to do an oral expression exam. Like, So for a lot of people, they feel, these kind of inhibitions or blockages around learning a language, about having, you know, having to do a presentation in front of a group, feeling that your pronunciation sucks, feeling that you're too old to, like, all these kind of limiting beliefs that come around learning a language. And then, as a coach, I'm like, I'm guiding you. I'm in the passenger seat, you're the driver. So you're the guiding factor instead of me being a teacher telling you what to do.
And
so it also lowers like the, what's the word? Yeah, like the things you would say, like, no, I don't want to. So I can look with you, like, okay, so what will work for you? How can we
Yeah.
make sure that this process is going to be fun for you?
And how do you, or let's say I would be your student, how do we find out what my blockages are?
Really finding the trigger first, becoming aware is the first thing, because a lot of people aren't aware. They just say, oh, this is not for me, or it's too difficult, or I'm too old, you know? And if you know where this idea comes from, you can turn this thought around. For example, a lot of people think Spanish is a difficult language.
Yeah.
But if you can change that belief and say, I think it is difficult because it's a lot different from my native language and because it doesn't work the same way. But because it doesn't work the same way, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a difficult language. It's simply different, and I might need more practice. So
Yeah.
you give yourself more space and more grace also, because this process is a lot about grace and being forgiving and accepting with ourselves, because it's, like you just said, it's not just learning a language. It's like it's a whole new life you're building abroad.
Yeah, because the people that you work with or the students that let's say your students, you work with Dutch expats, right? You focus on Dutch that wanna for whatever reason learn to speak Spanish.
Yeah, they're mainly expats in Spain, but also some people that have like family in Latin America or Spain that they want to reconnect with through learning their ancestor language, or people that have partners that speak Spanish and want to connect with either their partner or their in-laws.
So let's say there's always a clear incentive on their ends. The incentive is really to be comfortable, pardon, to become comfortable in Spanish.
Yeah, to become comfortable and really use the language on a deeper level than just the holiday, Hi, can I order a taxi?
Dos cervezas, por favor. Like, exactly. I think that's the Spanish that more or less everyone in the Netherlands will be able to speak. Yeah. So to really ask. Does it, I think a belief about neuro language coaching is that it's anything else than academic way of learning. So there's no books, no grammar, and so on. Is that a misconception or?
Well, if you're a beginner, then there's kind of no way to leave grammar totally out. But what I do prefer is through input, so through consuming sentences, phrases, or storytelling, that's what I mostly do, then you can deduct the grammar from it and look up things that you don't know instead of starting from, okay, so these are the rules. Now make your own phrases. That for a lot of people is like, but how? I don't even know which verbs and the like, So I really like to work with storytelling, especially with beginners. And then if you have questions about grammar, we can dive into that in the specific moment, because that's when it's gonna stick
Yeah,
mostly.
because that is how, in many cases, our brain is wired, apparently.
Although some students do really like, the traditional way and
Yeah.
making grammar exercises. So it's really an invitation to discover what works for you, what sets you on fire, and what makes you feel like, oh, I never want to do this in my life again. And so, so it's really not for me, the program is not really about learning Spanish alone. It's also about discovering how you learn. And I love seeing my students like flourish. In the
Yeah.
end, they're like, oh, now I finally found how I can learn. And that means that they'll also know how to continue without me afterwards. And that's, I think, of immense value.
Let's say that someone is gonna move to Spain and doesn't speak a word other than dos cervezas. How important is that language or mastering that language?
My personal opinion?
Yes, please.
I wouldn't be able to. I can't. So I want to at least be able to say, hi, thank you, bye. Like, I cannot go to a country and not, I can't, but a lot of people do. So, you know, I think there's no right or wrong. If you're the kind of person that absolutely believes that you're not a language person, that you're fine with just living in another country, living in your expat bubble, paying tourist tax, always feeling like something is missing because you can't explain to the people what you mean, that's fine. If that is what you want, you know, if you, yeah. But for me, that would not, absolutely not be an option. I could not live in a country and not speak the language. Or at least try, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't understand people that don't try, but that's me.
Yeah, I mean, but this is also why I think you run a successful business on this, because you're very committed and you have a very clear incentive to teach others to feel like how you would like to feel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of my biggest values in life is connection. I love connecting with people. I really want to know what makes people tick. And I feel like if I don't understand someone, because you might speak the same language even, but you need to really tune into someone to understand what they mean, right? It's like to me, it's like having a relationship. I always joke that I'm married to Spanish. Like, we have the best relationship since 17 years, our marriage. I love it. But I really see it like that. It's like, it nourishes me and I keep nourishing it.
Yeah, but I think it's true. I definitely think it's true. You have a very, very valid point there, I guess. Yeah. But I love how you see that, how, you know, because I also think in a relationship, you have a share, right? You both nurture each other. And but so it has been since, let's say, more or less 2014 when you started teaching others to learn Spanish. What has changed?
I think, I taught people before, but then more like in traditional way, you know, friends or people that I knew.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Debbie can speak Spanish, she can teach you. So I had like this book, like a learning method, and I was like, okay. But I got so bored. Like every lesson is the same and you walk through the exercise. And I was like, if I get bored, you know, and it also like it didn't stick with them or they didn't do their homework. And I was like, no, I don't want to do this. Like the passion that I feel for the Spanish language did not translate in those lessons. And I was like, there needs to be a way in which I can transfer this passion to my students. Right. So I left it for a while. I was a yoga coach and a teacher for moms. So I did something entirely different as I became a single mom in the meantime. And I really felt this calling to help mothers. Yeah. But something was missing. And I was in a burnout. And then I was like, if I am a coach for moms that has a burnout, I'm not the best coach for moms. So I unplugged everything, my business, the job that I had, my social life. I was like, okay, now I need to really tune into what the hell am I doing here? What are my passions? What makes me feel alive? What makes me jump out of bed in the morning? And I had I interviewed friends of me about it. And most of them, they were like, you, Spanish, beach and travel.
And so match made in heaven.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, who am I fooling? If everybody sees that, then why do I not I mean, I see it too, but I was like, no, you know, I studied Spanish. I never really got a job in the field. Why would I? And it bored me. So I was like, okay, but if I'm going to do this, I want to make it fun and lasting. And yeah, that's how it actually came to life, this whole project.
Yeah. Well, it's more than a project, isn't it? I think I love how you said, like, from you being bored, you know, in the traditional way and so on back in the days, that if you were getting bored with all the passion for the Spanish language that you have and that you express, yeah, it's very likely that students get bored as well. Would you say that is why eventually you decided to go for the neuro-languaging approach?
Yeah, definitely, because it really spoke to me. Rachel Marie Pelling, the founder, she is a genius. I love the way she runs her business. Only as a businesswoman alone, she really impressed me. I was like, ah, one day I want to have a business like that. But yeah, her courses revolve around the brain. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting that although the traditional education system, for me, it worked because I love languages.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, for a lot of people, it doesn't. And I was like, wow, now I understand why these classes were so boring. And there's another way. I was like, I saw this spark light up, you know, I was like, there's another way I can teach Spanish. So yeah, from that moment on, it's been one big roller coaster ride.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can completely imagine, because I speak languages, different languages, but I hate learning them. And I've always said, I just wish there was a method where you put on a helmet, you go to sleep, and then the day, next day you wake up, and then it's like, it's imprinted in your brain, really. And
it's still installed.
Exactly. And still up to today, I'm wondering why that hasn't been invented yet, really. But I think neuro language coaching is probably in the here and the now the closest to that dream.
The next best thing.
Exactly. The next
yeah,
best
well,
yes. No, I guess.
I think. Yeah, I think a lot of people look at it that way, as if a language is something, you know, you need to go through a certain process and then you know everything and then you speak it. But it's not algebra. It's not a formula that you can learn to work with. It's like, it's self-expression, and you can express yourself whichever way. The more vocabulary you have, the better you can express yourself. So in the beginning, you feel like a part of your identity that you've abandoned, you've like done self-treachery, because you can't express yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the, like, one of the biggest pains immigrants or migrants have.
Yeah.
The loss of their own identity.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can relate. But what, let's say that there's immigrants, migrants, expats, globetrotters, you name it, that are listening, and they have this desire to be able to learn to speak Spanish. What would you recommend them, or where should they start?
Input. Consume input. Yeah, don't start directly with the grammar. It's not going to make you happy. Well, most people, let's say it like that. Yeah.
And input can be like consuming, I guess, is what you refer to, right? Can be listening, reading, music.
Yeah, because the traditional system is about output. You learn a certain structure and then you create phrases yourself, and it really feels like, I don't know. So in the beginning, I would say consume phrases so that then you can get familiar with first the pronunciation, second, the order of the phrases, and you see the words, the vocabulary in context. So even though you don't understand everything, like, and start with really simple phrases, no, like, my name is, I live in, You have to find comprehensible input of your level. And also, well, yeah, the words are in context, and the grammar is implicitly in this. So you see which verb conjugation goes with which person, right?
Yeah. I'm impressed.
That's what I would say begin with.
I wished with everything that I have that in 2018, when I moved for the first time to a Spanish-speaking country, I would have met you, really, because no, because I started learning the traditional way parallel to being posted in a new expat assignment. So basically, other than that, my life was exploding and turning 180 degrees. My head was non-stop, well, overtired. Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
And learning the traditional way for me, and I can tell, didn't bring me anything, nothing. No, was absolutely.
So how did you make sure you made progress?
Yeah, by just doing it, really. And what has helped me a lot is to practice and consume within a context that also was within my interest. So I really wanted, you know, I had genuine interest towards France that spoke native Spanish and at that time also English, but, you know, and I was genuinely interested for me that made it easier to practice Spanish with them because I was genuinely interested in the answers to the question other than, yeah, tengo 30 años. Yeah, I mean, yeah, great, really. Yeah. But you know, I never used those phrases either. So the phrases that I learned in the traditional way were, let's say, relatively useless because I never used them, neither in work, neither in private life. So I started to really learn within the context that had my interest. Yeah, that I think that was the number one game changer, definitely. Yeah,
I love that you see that because I think one of the four elements I believe are indispensable in your learning process is your passion. If you cannot link it to things that you like, that say something about who you are, dancing, cooking, sports, whatever it is that you like, music, listening to podcasts, entrepreneurship, I don't know, it could be anything really. But if it's not linked to that and you're not able to speak about the things that you want to speak about in your daily life, it's not going to work.
No. I remember it when I was having Spanish classes, there was a whole module in the program about history. And I'm not particularly super proud of admitting this, but I have zero interest in history. I know that, Debbie, you do, but I don't even capture that information in my native language, neither in English, let's say in Spanish, really. So for me, that was a complete waste of time. But then when there was a module about going out for dinner, entertainment, cinemas, I have a huge interest in wine, for example, vineyards and all these things. Yeah, I mean, that I captured was much easier to process that information.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
It makes a huge difference.
So I said
the four elements, they're like, the first one that you need is your why, what's the reason, what is your purpose in learning this language? The second one is the passion. The third one is having a strategy that works for you. So for example, going to a class where a teacher tells you to learn about history when you're like, I don't care about, you know, that's not the right step for you to take.
Yeah.
Or it could be a language app that talks about my cat is eating sugar on the table. And you're like, I don't even have a cat. You know? So this app is not going to help you get where you want to get, but you just keep doing it because it keeps telling you, you have to keep up your streak of today.
Yeah.
And then the fourth element is how do you measure your goals, your progress. so you know what steps you're taking.
How important is measuring your progress in when learning a language?
Very important, because a lot of my clients also tell me, but it's so hard to know how much progress I'm making.
Yeah.
But you don't realize how much you learn in 1 month or three even, because if you, for example, keep up a data bank with recording yourself in the first week, you will feel like a freaking idiot.
Yeah.
Repeating the phrases that you're consuming. But if you listen to those phrases 2 months later, you'd be like, oh my God, I was struggling so much. Look at where I am right now.
Yeah.
And that's so empowering.
I really recommend
everyone. Yeah.
No,
I wish that when I was learning Spanish in 2006, we would be vlogging. Like, if I would learn a language now, I would vlog this whole process probably.
Yeah.
I would like, and also that would be a way for me to, you know, showcase the progress to the world. Yeah, it's really important, because then you see how far you come.
I love that, because I think when learning a language, it's so empowering to see your progress and to compare yourself with the previous version of you rather than where you that want to go, because I think that gives a super big confidence boost. If people want to work with you, how do you work with your customers, with your students?
I have a group program with weekly live sessions in which we do the consuming phrases. You can ask your own little story that I'll create for you there so that we can practice. And I also have one-on-one trajectories.
And in the programs that you're offering, whether if it's group or one-on-one, how is there any cultural element other than the language part of your program?
I am actually creating now a course about how to deal with cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
But I still notice that there's this antique idea, right, of, okay, I have to know how the Spaniards do so I can do like Spaniards do, or Latinos or whatever. And what I'm trying to conceptualize with this course is by giving them, sharing some of my experiences, showing them that what living abroad has taught to me is that there's no right or wrong. It's simply different. And you have to find your own different there and accept that you are going to be different from now on too. But it doesn't mean you have to be the same as they.
No, and also doesn't automatically mean that you need to fill the gap. It's all about being I agree with you. There's no wrong or right. It's all about being aware of where the differences lay and there where those might cause challenges or bigger problems, depending on the topic, really. But I don't believe that every expat should fill the gap towards the rest, or like you said, try to be someone else. Because if we're not the authentic version of ourselves, we're stretching ourselves so much and we set ourselves up for failure. Whether if it's in work, family, you name it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and especially those exactly living in family dynamics, you know, there can be so many expectations of, you know, there's this foreigner person coming here in our family. So why do they do things differently? But you really have to find your own path there. And I think in a way, living abroad is one of the major ways of personal growth, because you're going to be confronted so deeply with your own beliefs that you weren't even aware of, that they're just simply beliefs, or not even beliefs, they're like so ingrained in our way of being and you don't notice until you live abroad.
No, exactly. No, and I mean, in a way, it also has to do with our brain, because our culture is wired, or let's say printed in our brain, up to the age of the puberty, and that's where we lock, within brackets, what we think is right or wrong, how we look at authority, how we prefer to communicate, how explicit we are in our communication, or how direct we want to be. And that doesn't really change after puberty, exceptions here and there. But and living abroad makes you, let's say, the fish outside of the water, let's say the culture being the water where you grew up in or where you operated in. And because a fish doesn't see the water that it swims in, you can only see it once you're out, really. And I think living abroad does that to many people. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, the concept a lot of people have is like, oh, we're so globalized nowadays. We have internet everywhere. We're all interconnected. Like, you are 5 hours apart of me and or four, I don't know. And we're chatting here. Like, you're on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is.
Couldn't have thought about this, like, what, 30 years ago? It's crazy. But, you know, and McDonald's is everywhere. And I don't know, like, I don't want to name too many, like, companies I don't really care about. But if you want to have this deep cultural experience, man, I can go to Belgium here. It's like a 30-minute drive for me.
Oh, definitely.
I can go to Belgium and be completely blown away by how Belgians do, between brackets also, because it's, you know, it's not just Belgians, but it's like when you notice you're in a different environment than your own, and it doesn't matter if there's a McDonald's or if there's a, I don't know, something that you're familiar with. Like, in Europe, we have like the churches everywhere in every city center, right? And, you know, like, I'm in the city center right now, but still you can be so out of place and be like, wow, the streets are different here.
Yeah.
There's more or less people, or people don't look at me, or they don't say hi to me. Or it even happens to me when I'm in Amsterdam. I feel like a gray mouse in Amsterdam. I'm like, I don't belong here. Please, I want to go home now.
Well, definitely. I think the, you know, culture also says a lot about it's a collective community sense of belonging. And that, yeah, like leaving your hometown and going to a big city within your home country can cause that insecurity, let's say. Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. If you look at yourself many, many years ago, before, let's say, your travel to Latin America, what would you have wished you would have known, knowing what you know today?
Ooh. That is a very good question.
And also here, Debbie, there's no wrong or right. You can
no
answer, really.
What would I wish I would have known? Oof. Yeah, I wish I would have started this business way earlier.
Yeah.
And then, because my wish has always been to travel. And now sometimes I feel kind of stuck in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Because of my daughter, but I don't want to blame her, because I no. became her mom intentionally, of course. But sometimes it's like, this school system, and we have to stay stuck here. And now it's raining cats and dogs now. We're recording this, and I'm like, I want to go somewhere sunny, please. I'm like, I'm sitting here with my blue light trying to cheer me up a little bit. But my dream has always been to travel the world, to get to know other cultures, yeah. other people. And I want to give that to my daughter as well. So yeah, on one side, I should have started this thing earlier, you know, really living out my passion. Yeah. If you feel this spark somewhere, just really go for it. And travel does the same for me. So I wish I would have found a way before my daughter had to go to school to, like, work around this yeah. weird school system that we have.
I mean I can relate to the desire of traveling and being able to explore the world, and, you know, it's always, we're on this planet together, really, you know, we're all different and the same in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, and life is so short, you know. I sometimes like I see my daughter, and maybe it's like the cliche of any parent you'll meet, but it's like she grows so fast.
This is
Within
indeed
no
what I
time,
heard.
she's gonna be an adult. And I'm like, I have to, on one side, I wanna enjoy, I wanna cherish this her, you know, her youth. And on the other side, I'm like, she's gonna grow up so soon. I need to like We need to have adventures together before she's gonna be like, "No, Mom, I'm gonna go. Bye. I don't want to see you anymore."
Exactly. Well, I mean, that is gonna happen anyway. Eventually, that will happen, right? Well, I.
Probably, if she's gonna be a little bit like me.
We might go into that off radio, really. We might dive into it. I'm very curious to hear, but let's do that without the recording. No, super good. Then, is there anything that you would have wished to talk about that we haven't touched on before we are gonna wrap it up?
I'm really curious to how your life in Latin America has changed you since you got there.
Wow, it's a deep question towards the end. Oh, where do I start, really? I moved to Latin America, to Chile, in 2018, for my, but at that time, employer, which was an international company, and I didn't know anything about the continent, about the culture, about I didn't speak a word of Spanish. I was probably one of many that was under the impression that everyone dances the tango everywhere and rides a horse to work, really. A bit of an exaggeration, but in a way, it was what it was, really. And I was living in Japan before, so that was a huge change, really. That was day and night. How it has changed me is that I am much more open, much more let's say, I feel much more comfortable being part of a collective society. Where I feel now that the Netherlands, which is both our home country, is very individualistic. Not the most individualistic market or country in the world, but it is very individualistic. Which again is no wrong or right, but Latin American countries, and in this case Chile specifically, it's very collective. So, you know, the interest of the group is bigger than the personal interest. And that you see in big and little things, really. So, whether if it's my friend whose sisters are coming over and everyone brings the kids, and basically everyone and no one is responsible for the kids at the same time, because we're in this together and we deal with this together. That has changed me for the better, I would say, because I'm much more focused on, okay, how do I feel within this group? How does the group operate together? You know, and what is it that I within this group need in the here and now, rather than constantly being focused on how I influence others, for example. So, does it make any sense, or am I expressing it
Wow.
properly?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah,
Yeah, that
definitely.
definitely has changed me. Work-wise, of course, I run my own business now, so it's a different perspective. You cannot really compare before and after, but I think I told you this before, but I am much more comfortable with hierarchy since I live in Latin America. Something that back in the Netherlands, and especially working for a multinational organization, I was extreme, like allergic to. You know, having,
Yeah.
definitely. It's also not so Dutch. We grow up in school, the teacher being a facilitator among others. I mean, I think you can relate, whether you're, if it's your own school years or currently with your daughter, but the teacher is, you know, facilitates the discussion, facilitates the the learning process, but it's not, you know, the big teacher who has all the knowledge and, you know, always says the right things. And I think in Latin America, it's a bit more hierarchic, not as hierarchic as other countries in the world, but yeah, and I am more comfortable now if someone that, let's say a doctor, a medical doctor, tells me, this is what it is, this is what your symptoms are, this is your diagnosis, this is the treatment plan, I will walk out the door thinking, yeah, I mean, this is what it is. I feel comfortable with that approach. Where probably in the Netherlands, I would think, yeah, but I'm still going to Google this. I still need, you know, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm more comfortable with it. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it's an endless list, but let's dive into that another time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. I love it.
Oh, definitely.
Awesome.
Thank you very, very much for sharing your story today. The importance of language, neuro-language coaching. I really enjoy talking to you. And where can people find you?
They can find me. I think the easiest is my Instagram, at Debbie Ixchel.
Yeah.
If you could put the link in the show notes, they will find me.
In the show notes, I will definitely put your Instagram. I recommend following Debbie because she shares a lot of interesting insights and you're doing a lot of very cool things that you share on your Instagram. And I will definitely put them in the show notes.
Thank you so much for this great chat. I really loved it.
So did I. Thank you very much. And you and I will keep in touch. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Debbie. And if yes, let me know. If you haven't, then definitely let me know, because this is the only way for me to learn and to adjust the content to your needs. In the show notes, you will find all details of Debbie. I recommend following her on Instagram because Debbie has no filter in showcasing her life there. She's a true Spanish lover and she has surrounded herself in the Netherlands with the things that feed her brain. I hope to give you a warm welcome to new episodes. And if you have enjoyed listening to my podcast, you would help me a lot by leaving a review or hitting that 5-star button on Spotify. This simply helps for my podcast to be found by others and to spread the awareness on cultural perception. But for now, I'm wishing you a great day, evening, night from wherever or whenever you're listening to this. Ciao!